College Basketball Insider.
Some news and notes from around the world of college basketball.
In-studio correspondent for WFAN and CBS Sports Radio.
Attention, please, to John Rothstein. Please report to St. Joe's.
The Insider's Insider.
Joining us now with his thoughts and a break it down, John Rothstein.
It's College Hoops Today with John Rothstein.
Let's put the women and children to bed and go looking for dinner. This is the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein, coming to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. Later in the program, we will be joined by Michigan State head coach Tom Izzo on the heels of his induction later this week to the Naismith Hall of Fame. Want you to subscribe to the College Hoops Today podcast on iTunes and also check us out on the College Hoops Today fan page on Facebook. Give us a like and also be in a situation where you can let us know what you think of the product we're bringing to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. Also want to hear from you on Twitter. Send me your questions. I'll get to them later in the podcast. I'm at John Rothstein. That's John, J-O-N. And today's show is brought to you by Harry's. For far too long, you've either paid too much for a comfortable shave or you settled for a low price but low quality razor. Harry's offers something you've never had before, a great shave at a fair price. Good shave, good price. It's simple. Get the best of both with Harry's. Harry's Starter Set is a great option. For just $15, you get a razor handle, moisturizing shaving cream, and three of Harry's five-blade German-engineered razors. Plus, there's a special offer for fans of the show. Harry's will give you $5 off your first purchase with promo code HOOPS. Go to harrys.com right now and look for the Truman Set. That's H-A-R-R-Y-S.com. Enter code HOOPS at checkout to get $5 off and help support the show. Stop compromising. Give Harry's a try today. And as I mentioned, Tom Izzo will join us later in the show. And for me, this week, the week after Labor Day, has always been one of my favorite weeks of the year because it truly signals the start of fall. And fall for me means preseason workouts and inching closer to preseason practice in college basketball. I'm looking forward to getting back in the gym over the next couple weeks. I'm trying to get out to St. John's later this week to take a firsthand look at the Red Storm in year two under Chris Mullen. And I also am excited just to start seeing leaves change color because to me that all means one thing, the start of college basketball season. Now, a couple of news items for you out of the chute. Jay Wright, the head coach of Villanova, told me earlier on Tuesday that Omari Spellman, the five-star freshman for Villanova, hopes to have his issue in terms of his eligibility with the NCAA resolved by the end of September. This was the high-profile recruit in Villanova's program. Right now, Omari Spellman ineligible. Again, did not play when Villanova went to Spain, so that's a story we will monitor for you moving forward. Two other pieces of note here in our first segment. The Atlantic 10 and the SEC both released their conference schedules earlier on Tuesday. And look, one thing that stood out from the Atlantic 10 was this. The league did VCU, who has been, in my opinion, the flagship program in this conference, in addition to Dayton, no favors in terms of their conference schedule. VCU begins the conference slate in the Atlantic 10 with four of their first six games on the road, and they close the season with back-to-back road games at Dayton and Rhode Island, two teams that I have ranked in the top 25 to start next year. VCU is going to have to be significantly ahead in the win-loss column if they are going to have a chance to win the Atlantic 10 regular season title. Now, the SEC also released its conference schedule for the 16-17 season on Tuesday, and I have written this in the columns that I've posted over the past couple of months. I have said it when we did our SEC preview. I don't know another team right now that I am going to put in bold print in the SEC other than Kentucky. And for a couple of months right now, I have referred to Kentucky as Tom Hanks and Castaway when it comes to the rest of the SEC because they are on an island by themselves. Texas A&M, who challenged Kentucky for an SEC championship last year, split the regular season title with the Wildcats, lost in the SEC tournament title game, loses four starters, and their top freshman guard, J.J. Caldwell, still has not been ruled eligible by the NCAA. There are serious questions there, despite the fact that A&M, I think, is the second most talented in the league. And I was in Gainesville a couple of weeks ago speaking at a clinic at the University of Florida, and Florida definitely has pieces. The addition of Charleston transfer Kenyon Berry is going to help. I think Kevon Allen is a first-team all-conference player. But this Florida group, the players on this team, Casey Hill, John Egbunu, Devin Robinson, have never played in the NCAA tournament. So I think, and again, we all fall into this, you know, as part of the college basketball community, we have right now teams right behind Kentucky at the top of the SEC that we think are going to be second and third in the league standings, and there's serious, serious questions. I don't know who the second team in the SEC is, and for years I used to ask who the third team in the SEC was, because you knew when Billy Donovan was at Florida, you had Kentucky and you had the Gators. Right now, you have one team and one program, John Calipari's Kentucky Wildcats. Now, this year, in the Champions Classic at Madison Square Garden, Kentucky will do battle with Michigan State, and Tom Izzo, who has led the Spartans to 19 straight NCAA tournaments, will join us next here on the College Hoops Today podcast. Coach Izzo just days away from being inducted into the Naismith Hall of Fame. This is the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. All right, it is the start of September, and in basketball circles, that means the Hall of Fame inductions, and one of the inductees this year is on the line right now. He is Michigan State head coach Tom Izzo. And, Coach, what are your emotions like as you're set to be inducted into the Naismith Hall of Fame?
Well, John, it's funny because I don't know what they are. You know, it seems like I've been there once. It was in Magic went in 15 years ago or whenever, and, you know, it's was never a dream of mine. It was beyond dreaming, you know. So it's exciting, a little nervous, scary, because talked to different coaches that have called me that I've gotten in, and they say it's an incredible experience. And you know, just trying to get through the end of the summer, the start of school, and then the onslaught of this, because there's so many moving parts to it. It's been an incredible 3-4 days.
You know, Coach, in covering basketball, really, you know, for the last 10 or 15 years, and you see people reach this moment, they have different segments of their career compartmentalized. You've been at the same place, both as an assistant and a head coach, since 1983. Does that change the feeling, you think?
Yeah, it is a little different. At least I don't have 4 presidents and 4 ADs to thank, although I have gone through my share of ADs, but... That is an interesting perception on your part, that not a lot of guys have done that, you know. And so I guess for Jim Bann and Mike Krzyzewski, those two that got in that did do that. You know, Roy was at 2 places. And then, you know, people like Rick Pitino have been at both Crow and College in many places. So not the norm, but there's been a couple before me, and I've gotten a chance to talk to them and see how they handle things. And I think it's going to be good, because I think all the people that hired me when I was a nobody, which was probably last week, but a real nobody, are still a part of my life.
You know, we always see in certain cases assistants promoted to be head coaches, and you had that opportunity in the mid-90s. I'm sure this has been a time of reflection for you. What were your emotions then when you found out that you were going to be the person at Michigan State to be following Judd Heathcote?
You know, it's a very good point, John, that it's almost been similar. That, to me, was a chance to live a dream beyond a dream, and this is beyond a dream. So both of them were things that I thought were not necessarily obtainable. And when it happened then, it was, so much because of Jed Eastwood and what he did for me. And now I figure that it's still because of Judd, because of the chance I got, along with all the assistant coaches and players that have played here. It's different going in as a coach than a player, because the coach has to rely on his players to get in, whereas the player, you know, more or less gets himself in to a certain extent. So it's been interesting to look back and think about the day I got named here, and now thinking about the opportunity to go into the hall. It's pretty exciting.
You know, I've talked to a number of head coaches who were assistants and then became the head coach. Jamie Dixon's an example of people who used you as a resource when they slid over 6 inches in the same program. I'm curious, you know, 20, 21 years ago, when you were going to be set to be a head coach for the first time, who did you use as a resource? Who did you lean on when you were getting ready to slide over 6 inches yourself?
You know, it's funny you bring up Jamie, because him and I talked a lot then, and we didn't even know each other that well. I knew Ben a little bit better, but it was interesting to talk to him. And, you know, I kind of had a weird, my mind was a little different. You know, I was named a year ahead of time, so Judd really did a hell of a job of kind of bringing me along and giving me more of that last year and a half once I got named. I was kind of coaching waiting, like Mike is up at Syracuse, you know, and I think it made it a little bit of a easier transition, but didn't have a lot of people I knew that I did it at this level. And so I relied a lot on Judd, and then I was lucky because in our league, there was Knight and Katie and Clem Haskins. Right. Those guys all got along with Judd, so they kind of took me under their wing and made it a little bit easier on me, at least that first couple of years.
Coach, you win the national championship in 2000. You go to the Final Four in 99. But was there a seminal moment before you got to that Final Four when you knew that you had really turned Michigan State basketball for the better?
Well, I'll tell you, it was kind of thinking it would go one way or thinking it would go the other. It was like the seventh game of my third year, and we had gotten beat, I think, by University of Detroit, I think Central Michigan. And I think we were 4-3 and had a big, big, big staff meeting. You know, after that meeting, we went 18-4 and kind of changed everything that year. We won the Big Ten and went to the Sweet 16. And I felt then that we were making some progress. We had a couple of recruiting classes. But I'll be honest with you, John, I still never feel comfortable of where we are, where, you know, I want to get us to. And I look back, and every once in a while I get reminded that comfort means complacency in my mind. And there's not a lot of complacency in my life, and there's not a lot of comfort in our profession. So, you know, I thought we got it turned back then. I said 10 years from then, if we still got it going, I'd feel a little better. Well, 10 years went by, and I felt a little better. Not a lot, but a little. And now I'm, you know, just on to not only sustaining what we've done, but hopefully building on it. You know, there's another championship out there. There's some great guys that have, you know, won two or three and even a couple of fours or fives, and Mike. And so there's a lot of things to keep working towards and not feeling comfortable about. I can promise you that.
Well, you know, wins and losses both make us, you know, comfortable or uncomfortable, as you would say. And, you know, I'm curious, now that you're in such a interesting phase of your career, going to the Hall of Fame, you've been to so many Final Fours, as you reflect on the journey and the path the last 21 years, do you remember more the wins or the losses?
What a great question. I'd have to say you remember the losses more while you're still coaching, and I bet you the wins more once you're done. You know, I think that's kind of the way it works. The unique part about going to the Hall right now is I still have a job. You know, most guys that get in it are guys that are done, you know, pro players or things like that. There's a few college coaches. So it's going to be interesting to make sure we handle that properly, you know. But I'd say, you know, while you're still coaching, you know, like last year's loss feels like it's going to live with me forever. You know, the loss to Butler, you know, when I thought we had a legitimate chance to win it that year, the UConn a couple of years ago. You know, those losses seem to last a lot longer than a lot of great wins. But I think those great wins will be enjoyed once the party's over.
You know, it's interesting you brought up last year's game against Middle Tennessee, because I went back just and looked at some numbers of that game, and nobody talks about this. Your team played an unbelievable offensive game, and they played a perfect game. Usually when a massive favorite loses, it's because they don't have their best day. I mean, but they really played a perfect game.
Well, I think we shot 50-some percent from the field and in the high 40s from the three. I think they shot in the high 50s and low 50s from the three. And, you know, and we were a team that were ranked pretty high defensively and definitely three-point defense. And, you know, so you're right. It was a strange game. I mean, it was kind of like the Villanova-Georgetown game as far as they made a lot of shots. They took more shots than Villanova, but they made a lot more shots. And yet you're also right that we did not play. We probably played damn good on offense and not great on defense, but they deserve some credit. They made shots. Some of them contested. I'll never forget a 3-point shot from almost half court, it seemed like, that we fouled them on, and that went in. So it was kind of their day. They made shots, and yet we had a hell of a team, an unbelievable group of guys. And that's what makes those days sadder. You know, sometimes we've got the Final Fours lucky, you know, and here I thought we had a legitimate chance. You know, it was like our 14th, 13th team, whenever we got beat by UConn. I thought that team had a legitimate chance to win it all, and we were playing some of our best basketball at the end. But, you know, that's why you got to be good in this sport, and then you got to be a little lucky. And last year, we were unlucky that we hit a team that didn't miss a shot, and the next night they didn't make a shot, you know. And that's the unique thing about basketball that's different than football, that three-point line and fouls can really change a game.
Michigan State head coach Tom Izzo joining John Rothstein here on the College Hoops Today podcast. Coach Izzo going into the Naismith Hall of Fame later this week in Springfield, Massachusetts. Coach, a couple years ago we were in the bowels of the Barclays Center together after you had beaten Oklahoma, and you were talking about how much pride you had in guys always coming back to your program, and they were all guys who had evolved over the course of their careers, and they were veteran players when they left. This team that you're about to coach has a different dynamic because you're bringing in several highly talented freshman players. How different is that narrative going to be for you, considering that there's more than one guy in this class that comes with some cachet?
Well, it's a good difference.
Yeah.
It's a real good difference, John. You know, and yet we lost. We not only lost good players, Costello and Forbes, you know, of course, Valentine was a very, very good player, but we lost a kid, Kobe Williman, who was, you know, 5-minute a game player, but now he's going on to be a doctor, and he was very valuable to Didi getting better. So I thought that last year's team did an incredible job of bringing our young guys around. This year, our senior class, you know, got two guys that haven't played as much, and then we have another one in Aaron Harris who transferred in. So it is a different makeup on the seniors. And I think the difference on the freshman side is we've been really pleased with the three highly, highly recruited guys. And then, you know, our other freshman, Nick Ward, has been better than we thought. So that's encouraging. You know, if you go with Langford and Bridges and of course, Winston, now we got another guy, and we needed a big guy. So it turned out to be a great class. I just hope that the leadership on the front end is half as good as last year, and I think we could be a very good team.
Well, that brings me to my next question. Out of the returning guys from that team last year that won the Big Ten tournament title and got a 2-seed in the tournament, who do you think makes the biggest jump?
Well, I think Harris and Schilling are going to be the two guys that have to make it. Monstrous jump, and I think Will, you know, I'm excited about him. McQuaid, you know, I think he's now over his injury, had a sports hernia most of the year, and after a great start, hampered him a little bit. And you know, but I need some of those guys to step up. I need Kenny Goins, who's had a knee surgery early this summer and is now back playing, but I need him and McQuaid, and I think Schilling as a big guy, and Harris has to become the guy he was when Denzel was out. He averaged 17, 18 a game. When Denzel was out, he's going to be able to do that if we're going to be a real good team.
Coach, I want to just bring up a topic right now that you and I have spent a lot of time talking about, and you know, there's been teams who have benefited from it, but it's definitely part of the culture right now in the game, and that's transfers. And we have seen really this epidemic evolve into something beyond, I think, anybody, you know, could ever imagine. We've seen mid-major kids transfer up like you had a couple years ago with Brandon Wood. We've seen you guys, you know, add a guy like Ben Carter, and we've seen, you know, your program lose some guys. What do you think, as somebody now who obviously has, you know, some strong stewardship in the game, would be the best thing to aid this issue that's been an issue in college hoops now, more so the last 3 or 4 years?
I think the social media and the freedom to speak to everybody and all this and that is, I think it's really hurt our game. You know, I really do. And I think more than our game, I think it's hurt kids. You know, it's the old adage used to be, when the tough get going. And now the old adage is, when the going gets tough, let's find a place to bolt to, you know. And I mean, I'm sure there's places and times that you know, it's just the way it is. I mean, we had a kid leave. It was so mutual. It was so good. But he still had to sit out a year, you know. So that's paying a little penalty, and it's making a little tougher decision. If everybody just gets to move, and like the fifth-year thing, and I understand the other side of it, you know, if they graduate, they should be able to do what they want. But I think you're right when you said, John, that, you know, it's been where the smaller programs are losing out to the bigger programs. But I think right around the corner, the way it's going, is that, you know, we'll be recruiting right off people's campuses. And when that happens, I think it would be sad for the game of basketball. But I really believe in my heart the reason that I'm not a proponent of it is I think we're teaching kids. Everybody's transferring now. We transfer in high school. We transfer in EU. We transfer in college. And sooner or later, you know, there is going to be a contract if you get the pro ball. Or sooner or later, if you get a job like yours, you just can't walk in there. You can say, I'm walking in, I don't like things. But you're not going to get the exact same thing on where you change jobs to, probably. So I'm more worried about it hurting the kids than I am the programs. And that'll sound crazy to most people, but I don't think we're teaching them that you better learn how to... Athletics used to teach you how to get up one more time than you knock down, how to deal with things and fight through them. And I think we're losing that. And for that, it saddens me for the players, not for my program.
Well, your program has been a perennial contender in the Big Ten, and you'll be competing for a Big Ten championship again next year. I mean, Wisconsin, Indiana, and Purdue all bring back a lot, as do you, and you add, as we talked about, some highly talented freshmen. Two things right now in closing. Give me one school other than that top four that you think could be an upper echelon Big Ten team. And I know you always love digging for sleepers at this time of the year, so give me a sleeper team you think that could surprise some people next season in your conference.
Wow, that's a tough question. You know, I think the way Ohio State ended last year, you think of them down, but I think that through some addition by subtraction, they're going to be better. And I think Illinois had a lot, you know, I just don't know who's back there. They lost some kids. They had kids hurt, you know, and I think Michigan's got a lot back. You know, I think they got all five starters or four of the five starters back. And, you know, they had the injury last year. Bug hit them a little bit. So that's not one team, but I think that's going to make our conference really, really, really good. And, if I had to pick a sleeper team that's going to make the most improvement, I think I might pick Penn State. Mm-hmm. I think looking at them on paper and the recruiting class they had, they could be a team that makes the most improvement. I don't know where that puts them. You know, as we always talk about, to move up in a conference of any level, it's not just the team moving up that matters. It means somebody else has to move down, and I don't see many at the top. They're looking to move down, so it makes it tough in good conferences, and that's why these four or five major conferences are tough to really gain some ground on people when you think of it that way.
No, and scheduling is obviously a big part of everything, and you have a little bit of everything next year. You're going to play Penn State, for those who don't know, outside the Big Ten region, in the Palestra. You're going to Pearl Harbor. You're playing in the Championship Classic in the Garden. You're going to Duke, and you're playing in the Battle for Atlanta. So there's a little bit of everything. You're not playing cream puffs, Coach.
Trying to ruin my weekend, John? I'm just starting it. Are you trying to ruin my weekend? You know, the good news is this week is I got a chance to watch a little bit of the Michigan Hawaii game. And as bad as I was feeling about going to Hawaii for one game, coming back, going to, you know, New York a couple days later, coming back, going down to the Bahamas, coming back, and 2 days later going to Duke. You're right. That's brutal schedule, but at least we didn't go to Australia back and then all the way to Michigan and back like the Hawaii football team did. So maybe I'll learn something from them. Hopefully we'll play better. But traveling is going to be tough, but those games are going to be awesome, and hopefully it'll help us sooner or later. It'd be a little tougher with a young team. You make the schedule kind of thinking you have Deontay Davis, and that's going to be a little bit of a loss for us in a surprising way. But at the same time, it's you know, good for him, and I think the schedule will be good for us.
Well, Coach, I know that you know you're going to have a lot of obligations this weekend. We truly appreciate you giving us a couple minutes. You've been great to cover throughout the years here. A hearty congratulations, and enjoy everything in Springfield over the next couple of days, and look forward to seeing you during the preseason, either out on the road in the Midwest or here in New York for the Champions Classic.
Well, I appreciate it, John. I appreciate you staying in touch and the job you do. And we'll kind of do our job, you do your job, and hopefully at the end of the year we're both happy.
You got it, Coach. Enjoy Springfield. Thanks.
See ya.
We'd like to thank Michigan State head coach Tom Izzo for joining the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. Again, I want you to subscribe to the College Hoops Today podcast via iTunes, and also check out the College Hoops Today fan page on Facebook. Give us a like, give us a review, let us know what you think of the product we're bringing to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. Also, now I want to take your questions on Twitter. Send me your questions at John Rothstein. That's John, J-O-N. The first question is from Robert, and he says, John, can New Mexico rebound to win the Mountain West Conference and make some noise in the NCAA tournament? Robert, I got to be honest with you. I do not have confidence yet in this New Mexico team until I can see it. They lost Cullen Neal, the son of Craig Neal, at point guard, who was an all-conference caliber player. I understand that they probably have the Mountain West Conference Player of the Year in Elijah Brown, but for all intents and purposes, until this team proves that it can be consistent, that it can win away from home, and that it can handle expectations, I don't have a lot of faith in New Mexico. I have been on the record in saying I would take Nevada second in the Mountain West this season after San Diego State. Our next question is going to come from a VCU fan, and it's David, and he says, John, how does VCU fare this year in the Atlantic 10? And David, I got to be honest with you. I think VCU is a distant third right now to Dayton and Rhode Island, both the Rams and the Flyers. Top 25 teams, in my opinion. Dayton will have four players this year. Scoochie Smith, Kyle Davis, also Kendall Pollard and Charles Cook, that will be 22 years old when Atlantic 10 play begins. There is no substitute for that. And our final question is from Cyclone Fanatic, and it's, John, what start of the season ranking do you think Iowa State will have? I don't think Iowa State will be ranked to start the season. I am real curious to see how Deontay Burton responds up front for the Cyclones now that George Niang and Jameel McKay are no longer in Ames. Some news and notes now from around the world of college basketball. The more I split the atom, the more I really think that next year's ACC reminds me of the 2011 Big East. What happened in the Big East, the old Big East during the 2010-11 season? Three teams made the NCAA tournament that year with 9-9 league records. One of them, Connecticut, won the national title. I think you're going to see 9 or 10 teams from the ACC in the 2017 NCAA tournament. Remember, in 2011, the old Big East had 11. Texted with Mike Bray, the head coach of Notre Dame, on Labor Day about his team and about his mantra of getting old and staying old. Notre Dame, again, loses some key seniors in Demetrius Jackson and Zach August, but Mike Bray told me they will start three juniors and two seniors. Notre Dame probably not as explosive from the lead guard position this year in the ACC, but very experienced. Again, the Irish will start three juniors and two seniors in 16-17. Pancake Thomas, the immediately eligible transfer from Hartford, averaged 18.9 points a game last season, commits to Western Kentucky on Sunday. Why is this a relevant story? Because right now, Rick Stansbury, the former head coach at Mississippi State, okay, has put Western Kentucky in a position with three immediately eligible transfers, Pancake Thomas, Q Johnson from Washington State, and also Junior Lumumba from Providence, to give the Hilltoppers a dog in the Conference USA fight in his first year in Bowling Green. This is a team to watch moving forward. Now, speaking of the team that Rick Stansbury used to coach last year, Texas A&M, Tyler Davis, last year, the starting center for the Aggies, was a rarity in college basketball because he was a true low post scorer, a guy that was a five man who knew he was a five man. He only averaged, after going over the numbers over the weekend, 6.4 shots a game last year as a freshman. He will be a focal point for Texas A&M. If you want to see a player whose numbers should spike next season, it's Tyler Davis from Texas A&M. And another news nugget before we wrap this up, Tom Crean, the head coach of Indiana, informed me early on Tuesday that James Blackman, the dynamite shooting guard, will be cleared for all basketball related activities starting at some point this month in September. Blackman, of course, missed nearly all of last season with injury, got injured in late December and didn't play throughout Indiana's run to a Big Ten regular season title. So we have that update on James Blackman, and we'll continue to update you in other news and notes around the world of college basketball. Want to thank Michigan State head coach Tom Izzo for joining us, and also congratulate him on being inducted to the Naismith Hall of Fame this weekend in Springfield, Massachusetts. We'll be back next week, same bat time, same bat channel. This was the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein.